it's gotten much worse. I mean, all the bells and whistles, all the alarms are going off, and we are now moving into overdrive. As we discussed before, you know, the only difference between inflation and hyperinflation is I think people feel it in their gut because they feel it in their standard of life and their quality of living. They're working hard, they're making more money, but life is less enjoyable. You don't need any headline CPI. You don't need the government to tell you. That is the million, billion, trillion dollar question, because they try to tell you in the textbooks that 50% inflation per month is hyperinflation. But when you go back to all these different times and all these different economies and cultures, there is no. The one thing that is true across all time and space and economies and cultures is that.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got recurring guest Big Feta, CJK, back in the house. But CJ, since last time we've come, you came on the podcast, we've had a ton of additional debt going on to the U.S. balance sheet. It seems like we're in this never-ending debt spiral. Inflation is through the roof. We don't really have a solution, and the Fed is now cutting interest rates, even though we're in a quote-unquote healthy economy. So how do you see us getting out of this debt spiral? Do you think we're in a debt spiral? Are we going to print money to buy Bitcoin to get out of this spiral? With all that being said, man, how's it going? And how are we getting out of this mess?
Woo, getting into it quick, man. Well, hey, thanks for having me back. You've been doing a great job with the show. Couldn't be more excited to be here. And it's gotten much worse. I mean, all the bells and whistles, all the alarms are going off, and we are now moving into overdrive. And as we discussed before, you know, the only difference between inflation and hyperinflation is trust. And it just seems that the powers that be are doing everything they can to break down the trust dynamic, which means that we are closer than we've ever been before of actually losing control of the shift from inflation to hyperinflation. It's not just the government's printing and spending of money through the deficits, but the free market has a say here too. We can see the long end of the yield curve start to sell off instead of go down following the direction of the rate. So we have to be careful. Either way, we can be forced into hyperinflation, either through loss of trust through government spending or loss of trust through government debt holders who no longer believe the 2% target is accurate and start selling it off into the market, which of course would require quantitative easing. And here we are, Jerome Powell with the burr, baby. The burr is coming. And I don't think anybody's going to be able to stop it.
I mean, at this point, how do we actually trust the government? Because we had Elizabeth Warren basically knocking down the door 2 days before Jerome Powell actually cut interest rates by 50 basis points, a fairly large cut. And she was calling for a 75 basis point cut or even more. So how are we even going to trust them when they're telling us that, you know, this inflation target, like you said, is 2%. We're at 2.5, according to the last CPI print. But all of a sudden, we need these massive amounts of cuts because the economy is healthy. Like, how does this make sense, man? How are people actually trusting what's going on here?
Yeah, it's amazing to know that the trust has lasted this long, because everything that you just said, I think people feel it in their gut because they feel it in their standard of life and their quality of living. They're working hard, they're making more money, but life is less enjoyable. And that is, you don't need any headline CPI. You don't need the government to tell you to not trust your own lying eyes about how life is and what way the things are trending. But the reality is that, you know, I think they should have cut interest rates by 300 or 400 basis points, because the economy has just gone through the most aggressive demand destruction campaign in the history of finance. So nobody should be surprised. Back in March of 2022, and even before that, Jerome Powell and the officials were signaling to us, we want to slow down the economy. So why should anybody be surprised that the economy has been contracting and the economy is slowing down? That was the goal of the interest rate hiking campaign. Well, it was a successful campaign. The problem is that they should have been fighting the currency instead of the economy, because now we're at the end of the campaign and we have a zombie economy, and it's going to take even more deficit spending from the government to revive that zombie economy and get things going again. They should have turned their focus to the currency. They should have been fighting not we, the people of the economy, but the government spending and the abuse of the currency. But they didn't. And because they didn't, that trust is dwindling. And because they didn't, they see something coming down the pipeline that I think a lot of us don't see coming, or at least those who trust government data wouldn't see coming. Because as you said, inflation CPI is coming back down to 2. It's at 2.5, coming back down to 2. GDP says everything is good and strong because they're mistakenly understating inflation, which is overstating real GDP. So, you know, gold prices are going to new all-time highs. What data dependency are you looking at? What data are you looking at that's telling you lower interest rates? This is the first time the Fed has ever lowered interest rates with stocks at all-time highs. What's going on here? What's different this time? What information do they have signaling to them that we need to start cutting or we're going to be in trouble when everything else is at all-time highs? And that's the dilemma. The dilemma is that all of the growth that we think we've had has actually been a result of inflation. All of the nominal price money going up makes you feel richer. But at the end of the day, people are now waking up and realizing, crap, you know, I wasn't a millionaire a couple of years ago. I'm a millionaire now. But I don't have the things I thought I was going to have when I'd be a millionaire. And when you start to realize that you're working hard, you're saving, you're doing what you're supposed to do. But when you look down and you sit and you look at the real math, when you look at the real rate of return, not the nominal rate of return, it turns out that the interest rate that you're being paid on that debt is actually lower than the real inflation rate. And that means in real terms, you're losing purchasing power. You're earning more money, but you're buying less stuff. And that's the most important part of this narrative to maintain trust. And they're completely losing it. And I watched your episode with James, and like I tweeted out, people should send that episode to all of their family and friends because it was a phenomenal episode. James was on fire. You guys were going back and forth. It was fantastic and it was edifying. And it's actually, I think it's a national economic emergency. And people need to share that with their friends and family so they can understand the crux of the problem here. The one thing that stuck out to me, though, was that there seemed to be no solution. And I think there is a solution. I think Bitcoin bonds are the solution. And I would love to dive deeper into that with you. And I think we have to be aggressive with our education on how this instrument would work, because if these socialist communists figure out how Bitcoin bonds work before the capitalists, I think they would implement universal basic income programs. I think they would build different programs off of leveraging Bitcoin's engineered money status into programs that don't make economic sense. So we need to get in there. We need to get support people like Dennis Porter and Satoshi Action Fund and all of those lobbyists out there that are fighting for Bitcoin to integrate into the system. And we also need innovation. We need to find a way to create, you know, at People's Reserve, we're creating a debt equity hybrid product. And that's what the principal protected note is, the Bitcoin bond. And the reason I say it's the solution is because it creates a positive feedback loop to the issuer. So if the US government came out and let's just say Trump won, because we know Kamala is not going to do it, right? Crypto for Harris means not Bitcoin, right? That's why it's not called Bitcoin for Harris. It's called crypto for Harris. So we already know that. Trump gets in there. We're going to have a strategic stockpile reserve. Loomis and her bill are probably going to have a much better chance with the president talking about it and supporting it to add to those reserves and start accumulating Bitcoin for the country. And that is what the focus should be, because everybody else is talking about the liability side of the balance sheet. They're talking about how we have $35 trillion in debt. It continues to grow. Deficit spending is growing, making that growth accelerate. We have $219 trillion of unfunded liabilities. So we have a lot of money that we have to print and spend that we promised to print and spend into the future, which means there's going to be dilution of the dollar. So we need to start figuring out how we're going to protect ourselves when our liabilities are going to increase at such fast pace. And what Bitcoin bonds do is help get the attention back to the asset side of your balance sheet. Because thus far, the solution has been, you know what? Let's raise the full retirement age. You know what? Let's tie the cost of living adjustment for Social Security to the CPI, because we know it's understating it. So we can save on the amount of additional funds that need to be dispersed to receivers in the following year. And they keep lowering. Yeah, you might get nominal 2.5% raise next year. But again, inflation is 2.5%. So you're barely breaking even if you believe the government, or if you use a source like Govflation, inflation is like 11%. So you're losing over 8% of purchasing power. In other words, the quality of life and standard of living that's being provided for by Social Security is absolutely collapsing in real terms, because you're going to get paid your money, but what you can buy with it continues to decline. And that's all because the focus is on the liability side of the balance sheet, and because these products have not been ever introduced before. This has never been seen before. Nobody has tried to combine and create a hybrid debt equity product like a Bitcoin bond. And how it works is the government would issue, let's say, $1 billion bond, which for them, you and I know, is peanuts. But just for the sake of math, $1 billion bond. And they raise that $1 billion. Well, $800 million would go into U.S. Treasury notes at like 4 to 4.5%. And it depends if you want to get cash flow or if you want to compound it, somewhere in that range. The other $200 million goes directly into Bitcoin. And this is why we call it a principal protected note. Because when you invest that $1 billion, your principal of $1 billion is protected by the U.S. Treasury and its printer. Because when the $800 million in the U.S. Treasury five-year note matures, it matures at a value of $1 billion. So what's left over is the $200 million of Bitcoin. So if Bitcoin goes to zero, which you and I know it's not going to, but some of these people think that's an opportunity to happen, that's a chance to happen, even though you and I, it's make-believe. There's no precedent for that. But even if it went to zero, you didn't lose anything because your $800 million turned back into $1 billion. Let's do another crazy example. Over the next 5 years, Bitcoin has a 60% CAGR over the last 10 years, but over the next 5 years, it just goes down 50%. Again, no precedent. But that $200 million turns into $100 million. So the bond matures at a value of $1.1 billion. And $100 million out of $1 billion is 10%. 10% divided by 5 years in simple interest terms is 2%. So if you buy a Bitcoin bond and the price of Bitcoin goes down 50% in 5 years, you're still getting 2% APY on the note. It's the best risk reward. It's the lowest risk, highest reward cash flow vehicle in the world. And the government can take advantage of that fact and integrate it into their economic policies. My thinking is this: take the Social Security tax, because Social Security is a big problem. Let's take the tax and buy the Bitcoin bond with the tax, right? So it's not like people who are buying the Bitcoin bond, the Social Security funds themselves are buying the bond. Now, Trump talks about collecting tariffs. How about this? Pay our tariffs in Bitcoin. Let's collect tariffs in Bitcoin. Then we can turn around and issue Bitcoin bonds and raise additional monies. I'll stick with Social Security example, but this is an interesting statistic. The United States collected $80 billion in tariffs. And if you portion that out monthly and then you issue a Bitcoin bond on the back of those payments in Bitcoin, you could raise another $500 billion. Throughout the year. And that's just with our tariffs now. If Trump increased those tariffs and found a way to optimize that system, you could make up the entire deficit with the issuance of Bitcoin bonds. So that's really exciting. But when it comes to Social Security and liabilities and assets and the American balance sheet, what's so important is that if Bitcoin does what you and I think it's going to do, right? Because if it doesn't do what we think it's going to do, they still have principal protection. If it performs poorly, they still make 2 or 3% APY. The price stays the same, they make 4% APY. But if it does what you and I and a lot of people think it's going to do, because it's engineered money that was strategically designed to leverage the natural laws of economics and price discovery to empower we the people, well, then this thing is going to produce ridiculous amounts of return. Let's just say Bitcoin goes 10x. Now that $200 million turns into $2 billion. The note matures with a $3 billion value, where remember, just a $1 billion investment, that's 200%. Divided by the 5 years, in simple terms, that's 40% APY. That's better than credit cards. Even credit cards, they have up at 28 and 29. And the level of default is high and the level of risk is even higher. You're talking about a principal protected note shooting out 20 to 40% based on that 5 to 10x performance over the next 5 years. Now, all of a sudden, with a Bitcoin bond on the asset side of the Social Security fund's balance sheet, you can start to close the program. Right? Because you could fund the program perpetually, which is a little bit of my fear, what I said with those socialists and communists taking this idea and leveraging it to create a universal basic income program. We don't want that. We need the right people in charge to make sure we're leveraging these products for the right things that make sense economically. And what makes sense is put some Bitcoin bonds on the Social Security fund's asset side of their balance sheet. Let Bitcoin work its magic and end Social Security. Don't break any of the promises that we made. Pay out Social Security, finish that program, but close her down, bring it to an end, fulfill our promises, and then let people invest for and save for their retirement on their own. Get rid of the socialism. Let's move back to the republic. That's my personal opinion. I don't know if it'll be leveraged that way, but it could be. I'm hoping it's leveraged that way, because we don't need a universal basic income program, but we do need to fix Social Security. So this is the type of thinking, and this is the type of innovation that we're going to see with Bitcoin in the coming years, as it continues to get integrated into the traditional system. There's going to be new products, new services that nobody's ever seen before, And we need to be brainstorming these things and teaching the politicians now, because if we fall behind to other countries, we can lose that first market mover advantage. And BRICS, sorry, last thing, I know I keep going on, but BRICS is literally adopting gold. Like, they could have adopted Bitcoin and we'd be really screwed right now. This could be the biggest strategic blunder in the history of the world, that they decided, you know what, we're breaking away from the dollar. We're going to try our own thing. And there just happens to be Bitcoin. There just happens to be the perfect money, the first discovery of money, engineered money. And you go with old natural money. You go with Bitcoin. You don't go Bitcoin, you go gold. That opens up the doors for a Trump to walk in and adopt Bitcoin and crush and destroy everything they're doing.
CJ, they came to hear you cook, my dude. So I appreciate you going on the rant. But I mean, with all that being said, too, it's like Social Security is the biggest Ponzi scheme that there absolutely is. So if we're going to already use a Ponzi scheme, then it seems like it's almost inevitable that we're just going to print money to buy Bitcoin, because that's the only way to get out of it. Do you see us doing essentially that, or do you see us more going the bonds route? Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code Green Candle for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well. If you could see it here, they've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
I see us printing money, but that's exactly why you want to have the Bitcoin bond on your balance sheet. Now, what's really interesting is we see Iran is shooting missiles off into Israel, and the things are getting hot. Things are heating up. But what's interesting is the marketplace is selling off its Bitcoin, because see, the marketplace doesn't really understand Bitcoin as engineered money. It sees it as a speculative risk on technology. Few see it as an asset. Even fewer see it as a commodity, and barely anybody understands it as engineered money. But the more money we print, this creates a positive feedback loop. This is the magic about the Bitcoin bond, because once you issue that $1 billion bond, something happens. It creates demand for Bitcoin, right? Because you raised $1 billion, 800 million is going into the U.S. Treasury, 200 million is going into Bitcoin. That means you're going to create positive price pressure from the increased demand on buying Bitcoin. When Bitcoin's price goes up from all of that buying demand, the yields increase on the note, because the yield of the note is based specifically on the performance of Bitcoin. And then as the performance of Bitcoin increases from the increased demand, the yield goes up. Higher yields creates more demand, right? When interest rates go up, there's more demand for that debt. Well, this is a principal protect. This is a low risk, high reward debt, and the yield's going up. It's going to generate a lot of demand. Well, that means there's going to be more issuances. And if there's more issuances, there's more buying of Bitcoin, which creates demand, which pushes the price up, which then pushes the yields up. So you get this positive feedback loop where you issue the bond, you create demand for Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin goes up, the yield of the bond goes up, you issue more bonds, and it just keeps going and going and going. And the more money we print, because Bitcoin is engineered to protect us, it's a savings technology designed to protect us from inflation, the more money we print, the better the bond performs. So all of a sudden, our biggest enemy, inflation, our biggest fear, having to increase deficit spending, actually increases the overall value of our balance sheet because we're holding Bitcoin bonds on it. So you could see a country that is almost $300 trillion in debt all of a sudden have net positive equity because we made the right strategic choices and integrating Bitcoin into our system and into our economic policies.
All right. So then that's the way out then, right? I mean, it seems like it's a no-brainer. Just keep the Bitcoin that we've seized on the balance sheet, buy some more, maybe even print a little bit because we're going to print some more, and use that for government spending to buy a Bitcoin. It seems easy. Why the resistance? Why are they just starting to come around? Do you think it's a lack of education? Like, where is the disconnect right now with the government? And on the flip side of things, Is the government, or maybe just people in general, just delusional? Is that why we still have the trust in the government? And I mean, you look at the U.S. debt clock now, CJ. I mean, I'm getting dizzy just watching that number continue to tick up. So, I mean, if I could just go to a website and look at that, why isn't everybody else seeing this? And why is it only Bitcoiners that are seemingly awake to this?
Yeah. And that is the million, billion, trillion dollar question, because that answers the question. You know, in my study of fiat currencies, they try to tell you in the textbooks that 50% inflation per month is hyperinflation. But when you go back to all these different times and all these different economies and cultures, there is no mathematical point where inflation turned into hyperinflation. It's the one thing that is true across all time and space and economies and cultures is that when trust was lost, they move from inflation to hyperinflation. And that's where we are right now. This is just a sign that people are still trusting the system. We haven't passed that threshold. We haven't lost that trust. But the continued abuse of the printer is what's going to be the final straw, because people will see their quality of life and standard of living go down. So yeah, I think it's an educational component. The other thing is that Bitcoin is only in year 15. You know, for those who study financial history, like yourself and myself and others in this little niche market that we have, people don't realize how long it took to go from giant, big old yap stones and seashells and, you know, from a barter system and to evolve naturally into where we are today in modern finance. That process took thousands of years. We are in year 15 and Bitcoin is already a store of value. We are in year 15 and Bitcoin is already being integrated into Wall Street, with institutions stacking. This is unbelievable. The rate and pace of adoption of Bitcoin is even outpacing that of the internet. So I think that it's a trust component, it's an educational component, and it's just a component of like new technology, right? There's this famous quote, I forget exactly how it goes, but it's like new technology is just like magic. Like the regular folk of the day will see new technology and they'll think that it's magic because they're like, what? You know, so you sit down with some of these people and especially at the higher levels, and they're not thinking about these things. They don't really care about these things. They just want to make sure that their purchasing power is protected into the future and that their 10, 15, 20, 50 year plan is on track. And inflation has done that for them because they don't understand the difference between the inflationary nominal gain and the real gain until they try to build that factory, until they're in year 10 and they say, wait a second, I was supposed to build like three factories. Now you're telling me I can only build one? What the hell happened? Who messed up? And then they start to learn these things. So it takes time for people to learn it through education. It takes abuse to people to learn it through trust, but it takes dedication and understanding to just understand the new technology and the innovation that's coming to the space. And that's why it's so important, like I said, to support Satoshi Actin Fund, Citizens for Sound Money, Watchman Action Group. Get out there and get behind these guys because they're the ones who are educating the politicians on why these things are important. So the next step is, you know, make sure that you're being active in your local community politically as well, so that these people understand what's important, because it may not happen on the federal level. People need to understand that the federal government isn't the solution to all of our problems. In fact, a lot of our problems are created by them. So you need to turn to the more local ideology. And when you do that, when you can teach these local governments about a product like this, I think that's the future for Bitcoin for mainstream adoption. Because what you're going to have is, look at some of the disasters that are happening today. I mean, it's really sad. I'm on the west coast of Florida. We just got crushed with Hurricane Helene. Thank God we made it out safe, but there's billions of dollars of damage. Moody's just came out and said there's upwards of $50 billion of damage here in Florida alone. Now let's look at North Carolina. Those storms went up there. The dam broke. There's all that flooding, loss of life. Hundreds of billions of dollars between Florida and the Carolinas and what happened of damage. Well, at the same time, the federal government is sending billions of dollars overseas. They're sending money to everybody except us. It's unbelievable. And it seems like they're counting everybody's vote except us too. It's just crazy. They're like I said, they're doing everything they can to abuse this trust. So I hope that helps people start to wake up. But on the local level, we need to understand that we need to support our governments and support our politicians on the local level, just like they did after the Articles of Confederation, where the states had the most power and there was not a federal entity in government. So, you know, I'm with Thomas Jefferson. I'm with those guys. I think, you know, the states need to have that power. And we need a smaller, super decentralized federal government, not an overbearing federal government that can spend $2-4 trillion more than it collects in taxes every year for whatever reason it desires. That's what creates kleptocracy, a fight for the purse. So you look at all these things and you say, where's the money going to those people in Florida? Where is the money going to those people in North Carolina? Why are we not helping our own people? And we need to turn to the local level and educate them on the power of a product like Bitcoin bonds. Because what happens is the state or a municipality can start to have an insurance program for itself, right? Because if something happens like this, two things happen. Number one, the insurance companies get crushed. And we'll dive into that model because I think Bitcoin bonds was going to optimize that business model. But then the states get crushed too. Because, look, DeSantis sent up a bunch of our air assets up to North Carolina. Thank God somebody took leadership. Biden's on the beach. Kamala's trying to steal the election. And the governor of Florida had to step up and send assets to help these people. It's very sad, but it's kind of a preview of how it should be. The governors around these states should be stepping up all over the country to help come and support our fellow Americans who live in these distressed areas to support them. But how are we doing that? How are we doing that when we don't have the monies to do it? Because we send all the federal tax. Florida has no income tax. We have sales tax and other taxes, and we do well through all the tourism and our robust economy, but we have no income tax. So what do we need to do? I think a solution to this is that you create an insurance fund, make it a separate entity like the Social Security fund that the government can tap into when you have natural disasters like this, and you pack that baby with Bitcoin bonds. Because over time, if you need that money, you got principal protection. You know you can't lose, right? Like if a city or a state or a municipality or even the country adds Bitcoin to their balance sheet, what happens if they need to sell that Bitcoin during a bear market? You know, you might have to take a loss on that. You don't want to have to take a loss on that. But if you have access or exposure to Bitcoin through a principal protected note Bitcoin bond, it's at par value. It matures at par. So in secondary market, you're going to get a price based on the performance of Bitcoin, because that's what produces the yield. So you can tap into that liquidity anytime you need it. Remember in March of 2022, the banks ran into this very problem. They took all of the customer deposits and they bought US Treasury notes and bonds. They were forced out the yield curve because the bill was paying 0 to 0.25. That was the target range. You can't do anything but 0 to 0.25. So they were forced out to buy the notes and the bond to get the yield to profit, for being the custodians of the people's deposits. Well, then when the Fed started raising the interest rates, all the depositors said, hey, I'm not going to keep my money at the bank where I'm getting 0.25% or even less. I'm going to move it over to the money market fund where I can get 3, 4, even 5%. And when the customer came to the bank and said, hey, I want to withdraw my money and move it over to the money market fund, the bank said, oh, shit. Well, hey, if a couple people want to do this, it's not a big deal. But if everybody wants to do this, it's a very big deal, because the assets that we bought that are backing the customer's deposit liabilities, the assets don't equal liabilities, because the Federal Reserve just raised the interest rates. So the mark-to-market price is lower than the amount of liabilities that we need to send over to the market. I can't just send my customer's deposit liability to the money market fund. I need to send the corresponding asset that backs that customer deposit liability. So the Federal Reserve said, well, no problem. We'll create the bank term funding program. Right? They could post it at par and borrow against that collateral at par, buy the treasury bills, send the bills over with the liability, and all is well. Well, Brendan, have you ever heard of the insurance term funding program?
I have not. That's time.
Yeah, because it doesn't exist because they don't care. So the insurance companies, when they have a natural disaster taking place, guess what? They took everybody's premium and they bought cash equivalents, US Treasury debt. And because the interest rate was 0 to 0.25, they were forced out the yield curve. They were forced to take the risk of these longer maturation timeframes in order to get a yield on their treasury. And the idea is, look, we collect the premiums, we put it into the treasury. The amount of claims against the treasury is going to be less than we collect in premiums, and what's left over, we make profit. Well, we have a problem, because the collateral that they bought, the cash equivalent that they bought with all the premiums, same thing that happened to banks happened to them. Interest rates went up. The mark-to-market value of the assets backing the liabilities, backing the claims that are being made against the treasury from these natural disasters, they can't go to the Fed and post it at par and borrow against it at par. They have to sell it at a loss. they have to sell it at a loss. And that's why insurance prices have been going through the roof. Car insurance, home insurance, life insurance, health insurance, doesn't matter what type of insurance. If it's insurance, the price is up at least 20%, sometimes upwards of 40% just over the last few years. Well, why? And this is at a time when we're like trying to figure stuff out, trying to be innovative, trying to integrate, trying to maintain our leadership position in the world. And we have the insurance industry, which is 11%, roughly 11% of GDP, running into a big problem that the banks run into, but there's no insurance term funding program. Well, we got a solution. Bitcoin fixes this. Because when you have a Bitcoin bond as an insurance company, you can get into the secondary market and get your liquidity at any time because, again, it'll be based on the performance of Bitcoin because that's the yield on the note. So you'll be able to tap into that liquidity. But most importantly, you're not growing at a negative rate because when the insurance company has to pay a claim, they might price a premium. But 1 year later, if you go by Govflation, the cost to fix that claim is 10% higher. So that person might have paid a $5,000 insurance premium to insure their house on the beach. The hurricane comes. Now they need $100,000 worth of work done. Well, you're not, as an insurance company, you're just not net negative $95,000. You don't have to pay out the $95,000. You have to sell your treasury collateral. You might have to sell $120,000 of par value treasury, and you're only going to get the $95,000 because the rates went up. So you're locking in a loss in order to pay out that claim. So it's a double whammy. You get the claim coming in and you're locking in the loss from the underlying collateral. We can optimize the insurance business model and we can create insurance programs for states and municipalities who can't depend on the federal government to send them money, which make that make sense, right? Send it everywhere else, print it and send it everywhere else, but not to us. We can create these programs in order to protect and empower we the people. And that's Bitcoin. Bitcoin doesn't care who anybody is, but it loves you more than the government. And isn't that an amazing thing?
That's all fair to say though, CJ. But I mean, I think, you know, we're missing a little something here with the insurance stuff. I think, you know, I mean, obviously we had a natural disaster, come hit, but we also had a major hurricane hit last year in Florida. So, I mean, with all that, I mean, you know, the way that insurance is basically pricing out is insurance always is hoping for no natural disaster and they're always trying to get out of paying, right? So, I don't know. From a personal experience, I'm not really a huge fan of insurance and how it really works because it seems like you have to have it, right? But they always try to screw you. So do you think that this would make, I guess, insurance in a sense a little bit more ethical, a little bit more willing to help pay out in these natural disasters? Or, I mean, you know, is human greed still going to prevail in, I guess, a more Bitcoinized world?
Well, I think this is the difference. This is a perfect example because I agree with everything you just said and it's spot on. And it perfectly highlights the difference between a fiat mindset and a Bitcoin mindset. In the fiat world, companies will come and they will extract value from you. Now, what's really amazing is that these insurance companies are making record profits. Now, CJ, you just said they were losing money. Yeah, but for the last couple of years, they've been taking those premiums and they've been earning 5% on them, not 0.25%. So they are there to extract value from you. The price, when they're making record profits, that means they're charging too high of premiums. Even when we see these disasters coming out, like you said, with the hurricane last year here in Florida and other things that happened all over. So they are there in the fiat mindset to extract value. A Bitcoin insurance company comes in with a Bitcoin mindset, which is saying we're not here to extract value from you because in a Bitcoin world, That's not going to work long term. You're not going to be able to maintain market share when you're screwing people over and extracting value from them. We're here to deliver value for you. And here's how we're going to do that. Instead of holding cash equivalents in our treasury, we're going to hold Bitcoin bonds. And because the cash equivalents are performing at negative 5-6% year over year, and the Bitcoin bond can perform at 20-40% over that same time period, well, we're able to lower our premiums. So whether it takes the creation of a new Bitcoin insurance company or an existing insurance group adopts this business model, the first one to do it is going to capture the entire market because after that first maturation of that Bitcoin bond, your treasury is going to substantially outgrow any other insurance company, which allows you to lower premiums. And when you lower your premiums, that the laws of economics tell us lower prices equal more demand. So people will leave those insurance companies where they're not getting the most benefits and they're paying higher prices and come to the insurance company where they're getting the same benefits or better, but paying a lower price. So this is just an example along with the states and municipalities being able to adopt a product like a Bitcoin bond, which is powered by Bitcoin, engineered money, the most pristine form of collateral in the world, in order to change the dynamics of the marketplace, in order to deliver value to we the people rather than extract it.
All right. So then, yeah, then let's get on a Bitcoin standard and then we'll get all the value back to the people. But it seems like, you know, there's going to be some resistance met. And in the short term, in the interim, right, we're still in kind of this economic situation where they're going to continue to lower interest rates. How do you see all this playing out there, CJ? Do you think we're in a recession now? Do you think we're getting there? Do you think we're going to go to the Great Depression? Like, how do you see this playing out? Is there going to be two different directions, whether Trump or Harris gets in? Let's get the tinfoil hat on. Let's see what you think here, CJ. Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app, so you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange, and I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together, use promo code GreenCandle at foundation.xyz, and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
Yeah, so I it's amazing to see where we are right now. I honestly can't believe it. It's alarming. Like I there's no other way to say. I don't want to create hybrid or be too emotional. Like it, this is it. This is a very important time in American history. And we are at a fork in the road. You have to make your choice. You know, are you Bitcoin Cash or are you Bitcoin? Are you sticking with core principles or are you moving on? And that's kind of where we are in this country right now. And we can see what they're doing with interest rates, which this is to me, this is amazing. So if your listeners go to govflation.com or WTF happened in 1983.com, it'll bring you to this website. And what you'll see is that when you use the 1982 CPI, which in my opinion is one of the most accurate CPI equations that the government ever used, that equation is the equation that was being used in 1983. They changed from substitution, from non-substitution to substitution-based, and that changed the game. And those substitutions accelerated in the 90s, and now it's absolutely bonkers, which is why the number is so off. But the shift from non-substitution to substitution is what we identify as that point of change, of that trend change. So we go back to the pre-substitution CPI, and we say, okay, what is CPI? And today it's almost 11%. So when you take that 11% and you look at what they're doing with interest rates, that's going to make interest rates more negative. When interest rates go more negative, people are going to be forced out the risk curve. So the $6 or $7 trillion that's sitting on the sidelines, very soon, it's still in the money market fund right now, getting over 4%. But once you start getting below that 3.5% mark, now the risk reward is different because the S&P 500 is what, 6 or 7% over the last 10 years. So now you're talking about less than half the type of yield and sitting in the S&P 500 or even a blue chip that pays dividends so you can get the price appreciation with the cash flow. I mean, people are going to be forced to no longer lend to the government because it doesn't make sense anymore. The risk reward is not there. They come rushing back into the assets. And I think we're going to see something that we saw in March of 2020, but on a much grander scale. Remember, in March of 2020, Bitcoin fell to $3,000 roughly. Not that much longer, it was at $60,000. That's a 20x. And that was on the back of lowering interest rates and quantitative easing. Well, we are already lowering interest rates. And because of where the economy is right now, again, if you look on Govflation and you look at GDP, which then takes the real CPI, the close to 11%, and subtracts the real rate of inflation from nominal GDP to get real GDP. Because if you don't do that, if you understate inflation, you're letting those price increases that you're not attributing to inflation, you're mistakenly accounting for that as economic growth. And inflation is not economic growth. So you have to accurately know what inflation is in order to find out real GDP. Well, when you apply accurate inflation to GDP, We have been in a contracting economy for the last 9 quarters. And that makes perfect sense because I think it was like 12 quarters ago when they started lowering interest rates. So it took around 3 quarters for the economy to get back into that contraction zone. But for 9 consecutive quarters, GDP growth has been slightly negative. Now, that's exactly what you would expect from a demand destruction campaign, right? They're not trying to murder the economy. They're trying to slow it down. They're trying to constrict it because they're blaming inflation on it, even though inflation is a monetary phenomenon based on the increased spending currency units from the deficit spending of the government. But forget that. It's our fault. It's the economy's fault, right? So they demand destroy the economy. Well, they've successfully done that. And you know that the definition of a recession is 2 consecutive quarters of negative GDP. Well, many people don't know what the definition of a depression is, because a recession is the 2 consecutive quarters, but a depression is 12 consecutive quarters. Well, we are 9 consecutive quarters with negative GDP, slightly negative GDP. And what's happening is if we have 3 more quarters of slightly negative GDP, we will meet the textbook definition of depression. Now, a lot of your listeners are probably like, depression, what does he mean? But something different is happening this time. Like, I know that's the saying, like, this time is different. No, but this time really is different because you have a lot of smart people, even people like Warren Buffett, who are calling for a crash. And they're right, but they're just wrong about the direction of the crash, because it's not the prices that are going to crash. They could temporarily crash like we saw during COVID, right? Bitcoin went down to 3, but then it went to 60. So we could have a temporary liquidity crisis. But the result of this is that prices are going to crash up, not down. And that's what makes it worse than the Great Depression. When we had the Great Depression, we had deflation. And like I was telling you about the insurance premiums, when prices come down, demand increases. So that's the natural part of the business cycle. You have this destructive process where prices deflate and come down. But as they come down, more and more people can participate in the economy, and you get a natural rebound level, because eventually prices come low enough where people can start to participate again. We're not going to get that this time, which makes it worse than the Great Depression, because prices are going to continue to go up. Your standard of living and quality of life are not going to go up. There's not going to be deflation in order to increase your quality of life and standard of living. Prices are going to still go up, and your quality of life and standard of living is still going to go down. That's what makes this crisis worse than the Great Depression. There is no break. There is no mercy. It's up only, except for that temporary liquidity crisis where you don't even have time to think about what's going on because of all the narratives and headlines. So we are heading towards that. And I love Lynn Alden's comment. Nothing stops this train. Like, nothing stops that train. It's coming. But we can integrate Bitcoin into our economic policies, into our system, to help slow down the train. And even that, to take advantage of the movement of the train, right? When you think about hydroelectric mining for Bitcoin, what are they taking advantage of? What creates the energy? The movement of the water. So they leverage the movement of the water to create energy for them. We can leverage the movement of the inflation train to create asset equity value for us. And that's what we need to do. Take our focus off the liability side of the balance sheet, educate these people who are in power to make these decisions, and get the focus on the asset side of the balance sheet. Because the decisions they're making right now are only going to accelerate our move into what I would say we are in an inflationary recession. We have been in an inflationary recession for 9 consecutive quarters. We are on the brink of hyperinflationary depression. And if people still trust, then it will just be an inflationary depression. But prices are going to go up faster than people anticipate, just like insurance prices have, just like all cost of living has gone up way higher than what the CPI headline is. And if they don't change these things, then and they don't integrate Bitcoin, then I do think we are reaching the end of the road where you can't kick the can anymore because people don't trust you. And that's my greatest fear, because I'm an American, and I think the death of the dollar would introduce a lot of risk into my life and into the quality of life and standard of living for everybody that lives in the United States. And that's my biggest fear with this election. This is not good for trust either. You're seeing the DOJ sue states to keep unregistered illegal voters on the voting cards. So you're where's the trust in that? And again, that's what it comes back to, those things, the education, the trust, and then the understanding. And if we can focus on those things as a community, I think we have a chance to turn this around if we're able to get someone like Donald Trump, or even someone just similar after him with a Bitcoin mindset, who's taken a few orange pills, like an RFK, who can understand the power of Bitcoin, the power of this engineered money. It's a gift from God to humanity to escape our own problems. We just need to accept that we have created some problems and face those problems, and then we can finally start to move forward.
Well, then what does that mean for assets here, CJ? Because I'm under the thought that, you know, it would be a positive, obviously, for assets, but it would be a negative for the consumer, which will be kind of an almost like a melt-up situation where we could see $1 million worth of Bitcoin or something like that explode, where Bitcoin can, in dollar, the dollar exchange rate could just absolutely skyrocket. But what will that really get you? I don't really know. So is that a way you kind of see this playing out? Is that asset prices going to skyrocket to the moon just because we're going to have to keep seeing that money printer keep chugging along, or what?
Yeah. So again, COVID, 3,000, 20X, 60,000 on the back of lowering rates and quantitative easing. We're lowering rates because the economy is in an inflationary recession. We're going to have to stimulate the economy. We're going to have to increase deficits. We're going to have to issue more notes and bonds. And by the way, when the government issues more notes and bonds and increases the supply, that creates positive pressure on yields. So at the same time that the government has to issue all of this new debt, which creates positive yield pressure, the Federal Reserve is trying to lower interest rates, which means they're going to need quantitative easing. They're going to need the Federal Open Market Committee to step in and start buying some of this debt in order to help suppress those interest rates, because they want the interest rates lower, not higher. The market is kind of going against them a little bit, which is signaling that there's probably some wake up here going on. But if they are able to pull it off, if they are able to do it, Bitcoin will do, I think, the same thing it did last time, 20X. And what's amazing is the same move from 50,000, let's call it 50,000 times 20X is $1 million Bitcoin. So to a lot of people, $1 million Bitcoin sounds crazy. But to me, I look what happened during COVID. I look at what we're doing right now, which is the definition of insanity. We're doing the same thing and expecting a different result. I think we're going to do the same thing and we're going to get the same result. And Bitcoin is going to be at $1 million. And a lot of people are going to be surprised by that. But relative to other assets, I think Bitcoin performance is going to outperform. And that's part of its engineered design, right? Because absolute digital scarcity. You can create new homes. You can make anything else in this world. You can make it. You can't make any Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is going to be the fastest horse in the race. And therefore, everything is going to zero against Bitcoin. That is literally what we're watching with our own eyes right now. And in my opinion, because of where we are in global macro, the sooner you get in, the better. And if you get in and it goes down, you just buy more. It doesn't matter. It's your savings account, right? I talked to some people talking about the educational factor. They say, do you think I should invest in Bitcoin? I say, no. They say, no. All you do is talk about Bitcoin. What do you mean you shouldn't invest in Bitcoin? I'm like, what do you mean? Are you just messing with me? I say, no, you don't invest in Bitcoin. You save in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is your savings. It's a savings technology. It's not an investment. When you were saving your dollars, did you take those dollars and invest them in stocks, or did you put them in a savings account for a rainy day? It's savings, and your savings allocation starts at 100%. And then your needs and your wants and desires and maybe some investments take away from your savings. But Bitcoin has a 10-year CAGR of 60%. So your investment better be performing at 60% or better over the next 10 years in order for that investment to make sense. So yeah, people need to understand this is a savings technology. This is engineered money designed to empower me. And I need to leverage that technology to better my position. This is not an investment where you're gambling on a 4-year halving cycle or something like that. You need to have a longer time horizon and treat it as a savings and allocate 100%. And when you do, I just talked about this with somebody else the other day. They're like, what happens, you know, when people just, they never want to sell their Bitcoin. The longer you're in Bitcoin, the easier it is to sell your Bitcoin because the more purchasing power you have. So when I first started in Bitcoin, I didn't want to sell any of it. I couldn't sell any of it because then I wouldn't have any, right? But now going on 11 years later, hey, you know, if I want to take the family on a vacation, if I want to do this, if I want to start a bit, well, I don't think anybody should sell their Bitcoin. If you need liquidity, like if you need to tap into your savings and it's just, you absolutely need it because it's an emergency, just borrow against it. Because number one, you avoid taxes. And number two, you don't have to sell your Bitcoin because the most dumb thing you can do is sell your Bitcoin. You never want to sell your Bitcoin no matter what. And the goal is to capture as many Bitcoin as you can before the transition that we just talked about takes place. Because once that transition takes place, you're missing out on a generational wealth transfer opportunity. This doesn't, this doesn't happen, but every couple of thousand years. And now that we finally discovered money, it probably won't happen again. So this is your last chance to get on the right side of a generational wealth shift from soft assets into the ultimate hard asset. So we need to understand that probably even you and I, like, our Bitcoin will be for our kids, because I don't think people are going to figure this out fast enough unless there's an abuse of trust, which accelerates the process. So if they try to maintain the status quo, we'll be long dead before this whole curve is, we're at the top of that S curve of adoption, which when you're at the top of the S curve of adoption, by the way, that's where the meme comes from, infinity divided by 21 million, because now you're talking about global GDP, and global GDP is made up of what humans can do. It's about human intuition and creativity and economy optimization. And as we make these processes more efficient through Bitcoin integration, the economy is going to be able to grow faster. And at that time, the price of Bitcoin will actually fluctuate with the economy, right? Because that's what it'll be. Global GDP, infinity divided by 21 million. It'll be the global wealth of the world divided by 21 million. As global wealth grows, purchasing power will grow. As global wealth shrinks, purchasing power will shrink. But that's after we have all this adoption. So before that takes place, and by the way, if you're late and you don't get into Bitcoin until that happens, you're still empowered by all the characteristics and principles of Bitcoin. You still are going to be able to store your time and value and energy and not have to worry about it. However, because we're so early and we're only in year 15, now is the time to take advantage of this generational transfer of wealth. Now is the time to get on into the internet economy. You know, look at what they're doing with the traditional economies. I think where we're really going is two different worlds. We're going to have traditional price-controlled economies, and we're going to have the free market internet economy, where there's true free market interest rates, where the supply of money and the demand for loans will determine the interest rate, not a small group of men. By the way, that's price controls. So if you're out there and you're telling Kamala, you're an idiot, price controls never worked. Well, guess what? Interest rates are the price of money. So when a small group of men name the price of money, that's price controls. So make sure you call them out for what they're doing as well. And that's what they want. They want the CBDC. They want, forget Bitcoin bonds, Brandon. We don't want Bitcoin bonds. Who's this CJ kid? Get rid of him. Put him at the bottom of the ocean. We don't need him because we got a better plan. We'll issue your social security in a central bank digital currency, and it'll expire in 30 days. And if you didn't spend it, well, you didn't need it. And by the way, our new rule is that you can only spend your social security from the CBDC on housing and food. You can't use it for your retirement, like vacations. It's not yours. You didn't earn it, right? You can only use it the way we say. And if you don't use it, you lose it. That's how we're going to fix social security. So we're two different paradigms, a socialist, communist, dystopian hell where the government has full control over all prices and resource allocation, or a true free market based on the most pristine form of collateral in the world, engineered money designed to empower we the people. It's never been so clear to me, and I hope others can take that away from our talk today, that they have a choice to make where they're going to be. And I think the best thing to do is to get into the internet economy, let the power of the free market and the internet economy enrich you, and as needed, pull it back over to the traditional economy to live your life.
So then how are you feeling about us going forward then, CJ? Are you bullish? I'm kind of wary of where we're going. Do you see us going down? I think I might have asked you this in the last podcast, but I want to see if it's changed where, you know, I see two paths. One, shit hits a fan, crashes and burns. People that have Bitcoin will be a little bit better off than people that don't. But, you know, you're still going to probably have a tough time going to the grocery store, getting all those kind of things, still in a hyperinflated world. Or the other side of things where we get a little bit of a delay into the hyper Bitcoinized world, and it's a slower transition and everybody can slowly kind of opt in as things start to get worse and worse. But shit isn't hitting the fan tomorrow, you know? So right. which way do you see us going?
So I have two comments on this, and I love this question because I think the most important thing that Trump said at the Bitcoin 2024 conference, which I don't hear anybody talking about, it's all about the strategic stockpile reserve. This doesn't come up often. He said that he would expand the dominance of the dollar through stablecoin issuance. So that's amazing, because right now Bitcoin is right where gold was, right? Gold became a store of value. And once people understood that it was a store of value, they wanted to use it as a medium of exchange because that's what they were saving in. So you want to spend what you save. But there was a problem, monetary velocity, the pace at which the gold could change hands, because you had to weigh it, you had to shave it, you had to check if it was legitimate. And the economy itself was limited by the pace at which the money could change hands. So they needed an L2 technology. And the L2 technology was bank deposits, right? Checks written against the gold or debt notes written against the gold. And the demand for this L2 technology was so high and the abuse of the system from the government was so bad that Nixon actually had to remove the gold from the paper because there was so much more paper than there was gold. Right now, part of that is because they spent it when they didn't have it. But part of that is that the credit market was expanding because there's demand for this currency that allows me to exchange money in a super fast and convenient way. And it increased monetary velocity. Well, today, Bitcoin faces the same problem. Isn't that interesting? We're a store value and we need to become a medium of exchange. That's the next step before you become the universal unit of account. Well, we need an L2 to do that because there is no way to facilitate on the Bitcoin L1 blockchain all of the transactions. There's just no way to do that. And you can't increase blocks because then you make it more expensive and difficult for there to be nodes, which centralizes the protocol. So you need small blocks for decentralization, but you also need increased monetary velocity to move to the next evolution, the next stage of the money. Well, we have Lightning, which is awesome. We have Liquid, which is great. We have the Stacks SBTC, which I'm a fan of and think is going to be highly effective. But I'm also a free market capitalist. I think there should be multiple solutions to this problem. And, you know, I was just on a show the other day. I said it's like that meme where you're like laying in bed next to your wife and your face the other way. And she's like, I wonder what he's thinking about. You know, is it other girls? Well, I'm sitting there. I'm like laying in bed. I'm like, is the dollar really the best L2 for Bitcoin? You know, just like what the hell is going on here? But really, when you borrow dollars against your Bitcoin, you can spend your dollars anywhere in the world. And right now, the dollar is the best L2 for Bitcoin. And it's the easiest bridge for Bitcoin. And we see what's happening with Tether. They made more money than BlackRock, right? So something's working here. And I think as we go into the future, Trump could expand the dominance of the dollar with stablecoins, as he said, but that's just a currency. In order to successfully expand the dominance of the dollar and create demand for those dollars, it needs to be accomplishing a task. It needs to be there for a purpose. And the purpose is to increase the monetary velocity of Bitcoin, because it's Bitcoin that's going to be on the asset side of the balance sheet. And it's the circulating stablecoins that are going to be on the liability side of the balance sheet. And that's going to lead us to this world where maybe the dollar is around, you know, if Trump gets in, and if his team, because last time he got in, the swamp was not drained. I love you, Donald. I'm voting for you, but you didn't drain the swamp last time. So if you get in this time, you better realize those people who came for your life, it's time to drain the swamp, bud. It's time to drain the swamp. And I'm praying for you and I'm voting for you and I'm supporting you. And shoot, even if you need a Bitcoin guy, you let me know, because it looks like some of those World Liberty guys might not understand the full picture. You just let me know and I'll be there for you. I'm ready for you. I'm here to help. I'm here to make America great again. I'm here to recapitalize the Republic with this technology, but we got to make it happen and we got to be proactive and we got to do it now, because if the rest of the world figures this out and takes action before we do, we're going to lose any advantage that we could have. So that's the first part. I think that if we make the right decisions, the dollar can be around a lot longer than people are anticipating. And then when you look at the demand on stable coins right now, the dollar, some people say it's the Swiss franc, but the dollar is pretty much the cleanest shirt and the dirty laundry, right? So if we were to do this and to expand the dominance of the dollar and put Bitcoin bonds on the asset side of our balance sheet, that's going to increase the demand for dollars. People are going to leave all these other fiat currencies that aren't backed by anything or that are backed by gold but require trust, right? Zimbabwe backed their currency with gold. They just devalued it 40% against the dollar that quick. Only a couple of years ago, they backed it with gold. They're already devaluing. So it's the trust factor. Bitcoin solves the trust factor, and you can't use the gold, but you can use the Bitcoin because it solves the trust factor. And then what that does is it allows the demand for the dollar to grow at a time where we're seeing that trend change, right? We have to fight the trend. The trend is de-dollarization, right? BRICS is coming up with an alternative system. They're de-dollarizing. Well, how do we re-dollarize the rest of the world? this is a problem that we can solve, and that puts the United States in a position to be making important decisions as we go into the future. And as we try to accomplish the goals of an Elon Musk, of Bitcoin mining with the energy and security grid, never before has the two paths been so clear. And one path is like you're looking down like this dark road that says, you know, like hell is that way. It's not like it's going to trick you or anything. And the other side is Bitcoin. We don't need Greenpeace. We need Orange Peace. Bitcoin is the only truly sustainably incentivized network driving energy technology innovation. You want free energy? You need to go with Bitcoin. These are the incentives that are going to bring whatever country decides to adopt Bitcoin. And look at El Salvador. El Salvador was one of the most dangerous places in the world. They went in there, they cleaned it up. El Salvador has some of the best performing bonds in the world. El Salvador was dependent upon the IMF as a lender of last resort. Now they're starting to get financial freedom. So when you add Bitcoin to your balance sheet, all of this stuff, it happens naturally because of the performance of Bitcoin. So if we can educate people, I think we can really escape this doomsday type scenario that a lot of people who are anti-dollar, because I'm anti-dollar as it is right now. You know that better than most people. I'm not a fan of this system. I don't want to extract value from people. I don't want the government to be able to create inflation and steal purchasing power out of the pockets of we the people. That's just ridiculous. However, if we find a happy medium, if we put Bitcoin on the balance sheet and we protect our purchasing power and we leverage Bitcoin bonds to make that positive feedback loop turn inflation from our greatest enemy into one of our friends, then we don't need to go down this road where everything is gloomy and dark and dystopian. There is an escape. It's just going to take innovation, education, and people like you and me delivering those orange pills. And then people who are listening to this show, sharing with their family and friends and being passionate about the problem of sound money in our world. Because if you really want a better future for yourself and for your children, we need to focus on the root of the problem. And the Bible says that the love of money is the root of all evil. So we need to address the money problem. And when we address the money problem, that saying comes, Bitcoin fixes this.
There we go. I love it. But CJ, before I let you go, man, I've got to get you on some Greek stereotypes, man. I know we got Big Feta here. So I got to, you know, put the fire on the Saganaki here and heat some things up. So I want to see how Greek is CJ Constantinos, man. So Do all Greeks really smash the plates, or is that just a stereotype?
No, I really can't speak to it. But I will tell you this. One of the best food items in the world is a gyro. Yeah, so if you have never tried a gyro, get yourself a gyro. You will bang it.
CJ, you're saying a gyro is gyro, man.
It's gyro. I say gyro and people go, what is this guy, Spanish? You know, yeah. So it's a gyro. Grab yourself a gyro, get that tzatziki on there, and enjoy a taste of real Greek fine cuisine, baby. That's my favorite thing to do.
All right. So then, do you put milk in your Greek coffee, or how do you take it?
Black.
Of course.
Very powerful drug.
Yeah. God, put some hair on your chest. You got to get the big stereotype of Greek guy with the hairy chest, the big chain and everything.
I got the big nose and I got the baby face. It comes from that black coffee, man. I got the hair on my chest.
Yeah, exactly. So the stereotypes, all Greeks are lazy, man. Where is that from? Do you think that's true?
I don't know. But just look at the country. Look at some of the problems we went through, right? We dealt with some of these financial issues. I mean, it's amazing that when you go through all of those times, like, because you had Greece, a huge empire, Rome, right? All these empires, they always fail. And they always fail based on monetary policy. So I don't care if you're Greek. I don't care if you're Italian. I don't care whatever you are. If you don't figure out money, you're never going to be successful. So, Greek or not, figure out the money, baby. You know, opa, right. We can go with that. Opa.
Yeah, there we go. Opa. All right. So how many people in your family are named Nick or George or Georgie, Georgina, something like that? Is it over under half?
Under half. Under but we half. Have our fair we have our fair share of that though.
Yeah, of course, always. And then last one, is every single word in the English language from a Greek origin, like they say in My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you have a Greek grandfather, he'll tell you how every word comes from the Greek. Even a bit, a coin that come from the Greek. You have the bit, which is at the top of the spear, which we conquer the world with. And then you have the coin, which we have because they pay us the taxes. You see, a bit, a coin is Greek.
There we go. I love it. Well, CJ, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much for coming back on. Why don't you tell people where they could find you and what you got going on?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great conversation. It's a pleasure. You can follow me at CJ Constantinos on Twitter or YouTube, and also follow at People's Reserve on Twitter. We're in the middle of beta right now, and we plan on going live in the first quarter of next year. We've been building stealth, so I'm finally getting the muzzle off, and I couldn't be more excited. Thanks again.
Yeah, there we go. I'll put all that in the show notes so you guys could definitely check it out. And CJ, thanks so much. Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.